A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show, he's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
Tim Wakefield had good numbers here. There's a ball down the line. Mauricio Dubon has done it again, a 19-game hitting streak. Dubon's going to get to second base with a double. Arozarena gets the ball back in. Mauricio matches Michael Brantley's 19-game streak back in 2019.
That's a Brantley swing, too. Just drag that bat through the zone.
Started with that Mauricio Dubon double. The Astros scored 5 runs in the 5th inning yesterday against the Tampa Bay Rays. And finally snapped Tampa Bay's 14-0 start at home. Houston, a 5-0 win, rubber game of that 3-game set against the Major League best Rays today, 5:40. What's going on, people? It is the Paul Gallant Show, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. I'm Paul Gallant, as you heard Mr. Voiceman himself say, 713-780-3776 to call, to text the most interactive sports talk show in Houston on the HRNP listener line. You could tweet us at Gallant Says, at ESPN975, at Sean A. Mapes, or join us on twitch.tv/ESPN975. Sean, breeze of a game for the Astros. And there is something about when this team goes on their Golden State Warrior Death Star runs in one inning that's really fun to watch. You wish it would happen over the entirety of a game. But yesterday is another reminder of what this team can be. And they're doing it without Jose Altuve and without Michael Brantley. Very impressive win yesterday.
Yeah, and I think the Warriors are good comparison for with this lineup, especially. You kind of have to line it up right. And then, yeah, you have Alvarez, or not yesterday, obviously, but when they're whole, you have Alvarez and then Bregman and then Tucker. And so it just stacks on it, stacks. So I think that that's a very apt comparison. It was very nice to get the win at the apparently the fortress. That is Tropicana Field. No one can win there.
Nobody goes in there because nobody actually goes to the games.
Yeah, actually, no one goes in there.
Also, nobody goes in there and wins until the Houston Astros finally did. This lead in the Houston Chronicle write-up just tickled me. The Astros managed to do something no other road team in baseball has done this season. Win at Tropicana Field. The Astros blanked the Rays 5-0 in front of 9,916 fans.
They're rowdy. I like that the Rays are good at home because it kind of dispels the myth of like the home field advantage or whatever. It's like, I don't know. Maybe they're just like, it's not the fans. It's just like they're comfortable playing at home or they're just a good team.
People make a lot of excuses in Tampa Bay as someone who used to live there as far as why the Rays get zero attendance, but it really is baffling. People in Tampa Bay like baseball a lot, but the Tampa Bay Lightning are the team that regularly packs the house. Tampa Bay Buccaneers don't really do it either unless Tom Brady's under center. It's a strange sports market as someone who did live there for a couple of years. But the team's playing well, and they're playing the defending World Series champs, and there are people in Tampa Bay who care about baseball, and yet nobody goes. And it's not just because the stadium's a bit of a dump. It's kind of out of the way. But 9,916. Not a good look. It's not a good look. It's one of the worst looks in baseball. If we're being perfectly honest, not quite Oakland A's bad, but it's pretty bad.
Are they ever going to get a new stadium? Because I feel like for 15 years, I've heard about how bad their stadium
is. They've had a bunch of really weird proposals that have ranged from an outdoor stadium, which makes no sense in Florida because it thunderstorms literally every day in the summer, or to play half of their games in St. Pete at Tropicana Field and half of their games in Montreal. Those are options that have legitimately been explored. Imagine if they played half of their games in Canada. As far away as possible on the eastern seaboard as you could get. Montreal from Tampa Bay. It's pretty damn false.
That's like not even a real, like I believe that someone has proposed it, but that's not like an actual proposal. Like that's not a something that's ever going to happen. Because like, so does Randy Arozarena have to buy two houses? Like one in Montreal? One, does he have to live in an apartment for half the year? Like,
right.
Like why are we doing this? Like, that doesn't solve the Tampa Bay attendance issue. That just makes probably two different issues.
It's weird because they don't seem like they're in danger of moving either. It just seems like, all right, well, we're just going to keep playing in St. Petersburg indefinitely. And there's a big argument between St. Pete and Tampa, but no one cares about that. The Astros did win. And I want to do an exercise with everybody. There have been a lot of things for the Astros to this point this year that have been surprisingly good. I know it's not the best start, 13-11. I know you want more than what you have seen, but considering Jose Altuve is injured, Yordan Alvarez is injured, Lance McCullers is injured, Michael Brantley is injured, you would think that perhaps Chaz McCormick even is injured. You would think that there would be a lot of reasons to be frustrated right now. And yet, they've actually had a lot of surprisingly good starts. So I'm going to power rank in terms of sustainability the five surprisingly good things going for the Houston Astros to this point this year. Number five, I don't think Corey Jolks' start, go Cougs, 317 with a 799 OPS and two home runs, is going to maintain itself. And I also think that when Michael Brantley returns, when Chaz McCormick returns, when Yordan Alvarez returns, I wonder if he'll play at all. I mean, if Altuve's back at second, Mauricio Dubon's going to be getting a ton of outfield reps just with the way that he started off the year. And you've seen him play at the major league level for a while. I think Chaz McCormick is definitely going to continue to get looks. And number four, as far as surprising things that could be sustainable, I have Jake Meyers. Jake Meyers is also playing well. Jake Meyers is hitting 302 thus far with a 788 OPS. Who would have thought? Now, I don't know if that's sustainable either. I think these two are probably the least sustainable things that we have seen. But surprisingly good starts from those two, especially considering the Astros' outfield depth issues, which are even worse than they were last year, at least on paper. Number three, in terms of surprisingly good things, how sustainable are they for the Houston Astros? Phil Maton's start. Phil Maton comes into the game last night, stepping in for Luis Garcia on the year. 10 2/3 innings pitched, 2 hits allowed, 13 strikeouts, a 0.00 ERA. Wow. What? This is the guy who punched a bleeping wall or a phone or something last year because he was mad that his brother got a hit off him. Huh. Is this sustainable? I don't think so either. But it's definitely welcome, especially with new money Montero frustrating the bejesus out of me every single time he's on the hill.
Wait, you don't think a 0.00 ERA is sustainable for
Breaking
Phil
news,
Maton?
Sean, I don't believe it to be sustainable. I don't.
Wish
I do
it was,
not.
Though.
I don't. Number two, in terms of sustainable, surprising things to open the year. Mauricio Dubon is number two for me. It's pretty crazy considering the other three things we listed. Like Corey Jolks, what? He's good? Jake Meyers is playing well? Phil Maton has a 0.00 ERA. Maybe he's motivated from missing the playoffs and postseason and World Series last year. The Astros are 7-3 since they moved Dubon into the leadoff spot April 15th. He has the longest hitting streak in baseball right now with 19. He also tied Bob Bull Watson for the longest streak in franchise history before May 1st. That was done in April of 1973. So that's 50 years ago. Nice nickname, Bob Bull Watson.
Love Bull Watson.
Why was he called Bull Watson?
Probably because he was strong.
Did you ever watch Bull on CBS? There was this weird show that I remember seeing promos for every single Sunday watching the NFL. It's Bull. Mondays, 8 o'clock on CBS. Never seen it. I have no idea what it's about, but I just got annoyed by the amount of times I saw the promo for it.
To be fair, that's every CBS show that comes on during football games.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, it's this guy.
Yeah, that guy.
From NCIS. Yeah.
Oh, he's from NCIS. Of course, they keep that. They stay in the family.
Stay in the CBS. Come on, La Familia.
Yes. La Colombia.
You don't become America's most watched network for nothing. Turning your back on who got you there.
So I'm power ranking sustainable, surprising starts for the Astros. Number 5, Corey Jolks start. 4, Jake Meyers start. 3, Phil Maton start. 2, Mauricio Dubon start. And number 1, Luis Garcia continuing to pitch the way that he has the last two starts. So he's thrown 13 consecutive scoreless innings against the Blue Jays and Rays combined. And he is throwing his cut fastball a lot more this year. He threw it on 45 of 97 pitches yesterday. That's 46% of his total pitches, way up in average from games last year where he was only throwing it 29.5% of the time. I guess he's pitching closer to third base, whatever the hell that does for him. And on top of that, at times he's pitching angry, though I don't think he was as angry as he was against the Blue Jays out there. Love what I've seen from Luis Garcia, especially considering he has changed his pitching motion to get up with the times, to adapt, to be more modern, and it doesn't seem to be affecting him at all.
It is funny with the pitch clock. We talk, like, every single player who has even a minor complaint about it will complain about it to the media, and this guy had to actually change the way he pitches. Like, all the other hitters, like, you just have to get in the box quicker. That's all it. We're asking Manny
and
Machado.
Just stay in the box.
Just get in there quicker.
Yes, that's all you got to do.
And again, Luis Garcia actually had to change things, and he's like, off to a hot start, like, feeling pretty good.
Some people are adaptable. Others are not and throw hissy fits when these minor changes happen. It is a minor change. And Garcia has adapted quite well, and he's looked great. I mean, that Rays lineup has been the best in baseball to this point this year. It has. There's no questioning it. I mean, we saw how good it is on Monday night. Holy crap. I mean, they smoked the Astros pitching. Their cleanup hitter was over 5 with 5 strikeouts. They didn't even hit a home run in the game. So there you go. The 5 surprising things for the Houston Astros to open the year ranked in terms of sustainability. They have actually been quite surprising on a number of levels to open the year. Would you have expected any of those things? That Garcia, over the last 2 outings, would be one of your better pitchers to this point? Mauricio Dubon doing this? You definitely didn't expect that. Phil Maton, Jake Meyers, and Corey Jolks all looking pretty good. 713-780-3776 to call in and text, and you can join us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Mames Guay, I think, sarcastically asks, does Mauricio Dubon's success make Altuve expendable? You bet your bottom dollar it does. Dana Brown, he's licking his chops right now. I don't have to pay Jose Altuve anymore. I have the Mauricio Dubon. But yeah, he's not actually doing. Another comment. Paul says, HRW, did your ass raise jersey deliver? Actually, it's the Astrays, because then it sounds like it's ashtrays, but I guess ass rays would work. If the sun shines out of your butt, then yeah, that's what an ass ray would be. I don't have to order it now. I'm actually breathing a sigh of relief. I don't want to have to order a $20 Rays shirt and then take it to my tailor and pay, you know, another $20 to have another half Astros, half other team. But look, the Rays were playing well, and I like to keep the Astros on their toes. I'm that dangerous, dangerous lover, and that I always have a wandering eye. I'm always looking for the next best thing. I'm always looking to trade up. I am a baseball slut. I've brought this up before. There's nothing wrong with it. You can't shame me for it. It's 2023. I'll have you sued. You can't shame me for liking good baseball teams, good professional sports teams. And if I see a good one, maybe I'll be a fan of it. I don't know. I want the Astros to stay motivated. Marriage is hard. You know, you gotta always want your significant other, but they gotta want you back. They gotta want you back. 713-780-3776 to call, to text in to the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Any reaction to a 5-0 win over the Rays for the Astros last night? Welcome. And up next, it seems there's 2 possibilities for the Houston Texans with the 2nd overall pick based off of all the tidbits we have in front of us right now. I'll tell you what they are next. Paul Gallant Show, don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to The Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
If you're asking Las Vegas, the Texans are going to be taking one of these two guys with the second overall pick. Will Levis or Tyree Wilson, who per the Circa, DraftKings, FanDuel, and Williams Hill Sportsbook are number one and two in each. The only difference, Circa the outlier, our friends at Circa, with Will Levis, the front runner to go second overall at plus 150, Wilson plus 190 at DraftKings, FanDuel, and William Hill. Wilson from Texas Tech is favored to go second overall. Here's what Lance Zierlein said this morning on the bench, obviously our resident draft expert. Tyree Wilson has foot issues on his physical, and he thinks the Houston Texans will probably take Will Anderson at number two. He heard Will Levis will not be a Texan, that Anthony Richardson will probably be there at pick 12, and the Texans most likely won't take him, and that Bijan Robinson might last all the way to the 12th pick, too. Maybe the Texans decide to take him. Like that backfield, Bijan Robinson and Damian Pierce. Just never throw the ball. You could run the Mills cat, huh? I'm just kidding. The Driscoll cat? Oh, Jeff Driscoll's not here anymore. The EJ Perry cat? The guy from Brown that they got? He's apparently athletic. Huh? Single wing offense? Triple option? That would be fun.
Can we just draft a real quarterback? Is that out of the question?
Well, they could do that, Sean, but it might be more fun to just throw conventional NFL football on its heels and go back to old school offense, which you cannot deny would be a more entertaining watch than the dog bleep that they had on offense last year.
I feel like I'm in the Texans war room, like raising my hand, like, If we're going to run the EJ Perry cat, why don't we just run the Anthony Richardson cat? I'm not even saying teach him to throw. I'm just, if we're going to run the ball, just run it with him.
Honestly, it would work with Will Levis, too. Levis is
sneaky athletic.
Because he's a white guy. We have to admit it. But the big thing with Levis is Levis puts his body in harm's way way too much. And that's probably not something that you want. I would say as far as comparisons, like Josh Allen is definitely a crazy comparison, but for comparisons to Levis to Josh Allen on the good side of things and Carson Wentz on the bad side of things. So
don't love that. Don't love that. What did you say his odds are to be a Houston Texan? Don't love that.
He is, at least per Circa, the favorite to be the second overall pick. But DraftKings, FanDuel, and William Hill say that it's more likely to be Tyree Wilson. Meanwhile, Lance Zierlein is saying that it's more likely to be Will Anderson.
How much longer do we have to do this?
We have one more day.
Okay.
We have one more day. I know. It's so.
Just give me to noon on Thursday. I'm not even saying give me to the draft. I'm just saying give me to the end of this show on Thursday.
Hey, I got something else for you, Sean. We didn't touch on this yesterday, but this is a draft tidbit. At one point in time, per Adam Schefter, the Houston Texans were very close to getting the number one pick. But DJ Moore put it over the top for the Panthers. Side note, guys, I don't know why, and it's making me wonder if I've tweeted out something that's going to be thrown in my face after the draft happens, but the Carolina Panthers randomly follow me on Twitter. It is one of the more random follows I have. I mean, John Cena follows me, but he follows everybody, along with a couple of other randos who are following a million people. That's one thing. But why are the Carolina Panthers following me? What did I do? What is about to happen? Speaking of social media, oh, Sean, were you about to say something?
Yes.
What do you think is happening here? Well, why are the Panthers following me on Twitter?
I was actually going to talk about the Texans getting the number one pick when it doesn't seem like they want any of the quarterbacks. I guess they wanted Bryce Young. But also, it would make more sense if, like, the Bears followed you because you were like, they're not going to get a trade.
Oh, yeah, because I was talking so much trash about Ryan Pace, the GM.
I don't know why the now I'm excited for the draft because I want to see the Panthers tweet something snarky at me.
I know. I want them to freeze and cold take me. Listen, all publicity is good publicity. Hashtag chill dog. I will take it. I don't care if I get slandered online. It means I'm relevant, baby. That's all I want.
God, that'd be great. The week Tucker Carlson leaves, a new a new flower blooms, and it's the Carolina Panthers.
Many people are asking why the Carolina Panthers are following noted liberal Paul Gallant on Twitter. What is happening? What is going on? I'll tell you what's going on. Paul Gallant is Antifa. I don't know how those two relate, but
what if Tuck Carlson took a job with the Carolina Panthers, and then he's like, "I got a guy that you're going to want to keep tabs on, get some content out of against his will."
Hey, that's fine. Listen, I have no ill will towards Tucker Carlson. I just want to talk to him. Seriously, I just want to talk to him, and I want to see how many times I can get him to fake laugh. You know, with his little whatever the hell's going on laugh. Sounds like Elmo. Anyway, as we take a look at social media for the Houston Texans and the NFL draft, which is right around the corner, they followed J.J. Watt in tweeting out eyeball emojis 30 minutes after Watt had tweeted it. And it does make me wonder if Watt's going to, one, be signed to a one-day contract and retire as a Houston Texan in the next 24 hours, or two, if J.J. Watt's going to make the announcement for the second-round pick. Whatever the case, I want whoever's running the Houston Texans' social media to stop. Just stop. Please stop. Just don't post anything, okay? Just stop. Unless you're going to post something else that we could make fun of, I want you to stop. The eyeball emojis, no. Out of bounds, you're not allowed to do it. Nope. No. I do not want that. 713-780-3776 is how you call in or text into the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Phil has a thought on Bryce Young. Phil.
Hello. Hey, I'm just curious if Bryce Young is still available at two, would the Texans pass on him? Because everyone says they're not going to take a quarterback.
It's a great question, Phil. I'll be honest. I do not know. I don't think anyone knows. It would piss everybody off. I know that. I think if Bryce Young's available at two and the Texans don't take him, I don't think anything would go further to piss this very frustrated fan base off and burn away all goodwill that was earned by hiring D'Amico Ryans. Nothing would make it worse than that. Fair or unfair. I mean, maybe Bryce Young won't even be good, but if they pass on him and he's available, people are going to lose their bleeping minds. So,
yeah, I think I know it's a slim chance, but, you know, everyone's talking that they're not going to take a quarterback. Guess they're assuming that he would be gone at one.
That is the assumption right now, Phil, and I think he's going to be gone number one, too. I think everything is leading up to Bryce Young being the first player taken off the board. The odds in Vegas are so, so heavily in favor of Young. I feel like that's telling us something. And again, that's the only thing we have to go off of. But essentially, you got to bet like $2,000 to win $100 if you're betting on Bryce Young to be the first overall pick, if my gambling math is correct. It's such a lopsided favorite. It would be a giant shock if Bryce Young's available at two. And if he's available at two, the Texans have to take him. Like, they have to.
Did you not see that Will Levis is telling his friends and family that he's...
Stop with that Reddit thing. I don't buy it. I don't buy that for a second. Anyone can post anything online, and there's enough stupid people out there who will take it without even a slight pause to think, wait, Shady Acres, 420-69, Boogerballs McGee is saying that he heard that Will Levis is telling friends and family he's going first overall.
And ESPN isn't squeezing every last drop of content out of the number one pick that they possibly can leading up to the draft.
Oh, Sean, we're so close. We're so close. We're so close. And you know what? Give us credit. We've been the one show that's been like, this time of year stupid. We know what we don't know. And I just hate that everybody else in this industry, in the sports media complex, decides that, no, I know. Like, how, if you've ever watched an NFL draft, if you've ever watched an NFL season, how does anyone have any confidence at all about their pre-draft opinions? Hell, even their post-draft opinions until a couple of years down the road. But that's just me. 713-780-3776 to call, to text in to the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Coming up next, Aaron Rodgers in New York is going to be disappointing, but not in the way that you think I'm saying. Paul Gallant Show, don't go anywhere.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
He actually sat, came in my office yesterday at some point and asked the question, you know, kind of like a proposal. And I said yes. No, there is consensus, and we're excited.
Then tell us. That's Frank Reich. Tell us. Tell us, you rallying the Buffalo Bills from down 35-3 against the Houston Oilers, you bastard. Just let us know. We just want to know.
They can't show their hand or else someone will trade up ahead of them.
No. Let's be honest, though. Bleep Frank Reich. Just tell us who you're picking, you jackass.
No, someone's going to trade for the 0th pick.
Well,
and then scoop them up.
No one is. They're not trading out of that spot. There's a consensus for the number one that they traded up for. Just tell us who you're picking, you jackasses. Why do I have to figure this out through Vegas? Like, you know what? I hope this goes viral. I hope this is why the Carolina Panthers follow me on Twitter. Hey, Frank, tell us, you Houston area terrorist. Thank you. Just tell us.
There's a consensus.
Just tell us. Tell us, damn it. I can't do this.
They will tell us, Paul.
I
Thursday at 7 p.m. on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
And on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.
Jeremy Brady and John Granato are going to be on the call of the draft conversation.
Yeah, they'll tell us then.
And the Wheelhouse. Guess what? The Wheelhouse, they're going to be in Kansas City. Hell yeah. We'll be at Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage in the Southwest Freeway from 6 to 11. It's Granato,
Jeremy,
me, PC. We're bringing you the ESPN 97.5 Draft Show. And make sure that you sign up there early because you could qualify to win a 75-inch TV courtesy of Audio Visual Consultation. Our entire NFL draft coverage is presented by 1800 Tequila, the official tequila of the Houston Texans. Seamless advertisement. Back to Frank Reich. Just tell us. Tell us. I won't make any jokes about your last name. I won't. And how the Fourth Reich is destined to fail. I won't.
I was going to ask, is this his first, second coaching stop? Or is this his, third?
This is his second head coaching gig. So this is the second Reich.
Can't wait for him to get fired.
Well,
and then get another job. And then immediately get another job. I know he has a family, but come on.
It's so funny how everyone cries for coaches.
He's getting paid $7 million a year to be like, I know who we're picking. I won't tell you.
It sucks that David Culley didn't get longer than a year, but I mean, no, it doesn't.
He got $16 million to coach 1 year of football.
Same thing with Lovie Smith. Everyone's like, oh, it's a bad look. Is it? He just got a vacation. Get a retirement package. Like, good for those guys. I think it's good for the Texans being that generous.
It's
what? It didn't work out. Here you go. Here's all the money.
It's like UFC fighters who don't make any money, then like transitioning to celebrity boxing. They just fight Jake Paul and make millions of dollars. That's what the Texans were. They're the Jake Paul fight for all these old coaches.
I like it. All right. Continuing to go around the NFL. Here is why Aaron Rodgers in New York is going to be disappointing. Colin Cowherd said something on The Herd about what Rodgers can expect from a often hyped New York media.
I do not believe the New York media, which leans left, the media leans left, I lean left, and it always has. Just be honest about this stuff. Fox News is an outlier. Most media is moderate to left, and they're going to attack him for the vaccine stuff. No, they're not. And here's why. Because he's going to win games.
Okay, well, I don't know about that last part, but I do agree with Cowherd. I don't think people are going to come after him. And I'm not going to lie, I think that it would be more entertaining to see Aaron Rodgers combating aggressive New York area reporters than it would be to actually watch the New York Jets this year. I was here for Aaron Rodgers to be asked questions about vaccines that no one in Green Bay would dare to ask. No one would ever ask him a question about stuff like that. In New York, it is possible. And I just am here for, one, the back and forth, two, the uproar online, because I like this kind of chaos. I like it when we get mad over stupid, trivial stuff.
So what you're saying is that he got traded to New York like 2 or 3 years too late.
Yes. If he was traded to New York in the midst of the pandemic, oh my God, the content.
Was it? Yeah, it was 2021 that he was like, it seemed like every other week he had.
He was gone.
Yeah,
right.
He just had something to say.
And this is going to be comparatively disappointing. But maybe it won't be. I really hope that the New York media, they tie their shoes tight and that they come to work and work hard every single day. Don't be a bunch of Rodgers bobos just because the Jets have never had a good quarterback. Don't do that. Don't do that.
I think if they get off to like a rough start, or they have like some, like if they lose 2 out of 3 games, or you know they have some swoon like that, the knives will come out. Because like you said, in Green Bay, they're not going to ask them the questions, and there's a little of like, yeah, like you're a Hall of Famer and stuff. That was for another team. Like we don't love you like Green Bay loves you or loved you. It is a little troubling that all basically every Packer fan you see online is like, oh, all right, finally. Finally, we're done with this.
I get it after last year. My big question, what are the odds that Rodgers shows up for training camp? I don't think it's 100%. I don't. I would say it's probably closer to like 65, 70%. And even then, I might be overestimating it.
What's he going to be doing?
That's the thing, though. Jets media will lose their minds over that. And that's how we get them off on the wrong foot. By the way, Joe Douglas, the general manager of the New York Jets, who took Zach Wilson, but everyone in New York loves for whatever reason, here's what he had to say about how Aaron Rodgers is going to help Zach Wilson.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to be a great thing for Zach. And, you know, I've spoke to you guys at the combine, and, you know, Zach's ceiling is unlimited. And no one works harder, no one loves ball more than Zach Wilson. And him having the opportunity to really shadow and be with a first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback every day, every hour he's in the building, that's a great opportunity and a great experience.
Cool. I don't believe that for a second. Zach Wilson is toast. Just get rid of him. Aaron Rodgers is not going to make Zach Wilson a better player. Like, Zach Wilson is essentially a Fran Tarkenton emulator who is playing football in the wrong era. I think that Zach Wilson could have worked great in the 60s. Someone just texted in, oh, Joe Namath isn't a good quarterback. Just because you did that, Broadway Joe, just because you did that, do you know what Joe Namath's career completion percentage is?
Well, it's a different era. So, like, 60?
No, it was 50.1%. Do you know what Joe Namath's touchdown-to-interception ratio is?
2-1?
It is 173 to 220.
So,
But great quarterback. Great quarterback, New York Jets. See, Joe Namath is the prime example of why everyone in New York loves the smell of their own farts. Joe Namath and Eli Manning. These are the two greatest quarterbacks in New York football history. And then take a look at their statistics. And I get it, different era, but New York loves to make New York seem like it was amazing. I'm sure Joe Namath was one of the better quarterbacks back in his era, but it's funny. The just complete self-gratification in a circle that New York loves to engage in when it comes to their very mediocre all-time sports franchises.
It's also like no, we had a good quarterback 60 years ago. We had a good quarterback.
Right.
It's like
when I wasn't alive, when my grandfather was, what, like in his 30s. Like, cool. Congratulations. Okay, let's continue to go around the National Football League. Does anyone think Jonathan Gannon's going to survive as the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals? He was asked about his interactions with the media in Philadelphia, and he went on a bit of a diatribe that never happened. Here is Gannon.
But I'm very comfortable talking to media. Philly is a very hard media market. We were 9-0, and I did my presser, and they say, "Coach, we want you fired." And I said, "We're the number one defense in the NFL right now in every statistical category. Why do you want me fired? You don't blitz enough." I said, "Well, we lead the league in sacks by 30 plus sacks. So if you want to come call the defense, and you can have at it." But no, it's cool. They have a job to do, and I understand that.
No, it's cool. It didn't bother me at all last year, even though no one ever did that at a press conference. No Philly reporter did. That was sports talk radio. Don't get it twisted. And on top of that, the Eagles were never 9-0. So I don't know what Gannon was talking about there. Anyway, Jonathan Gannon, I'm just not feeling it. And I think that Sean Mapes put it best when he said that he gives off major Kendall Roy from Succession vibes. If you've watched Succession, you would know. Does anyone else remember these weird noises that Jonathan Gannon made during his early moments with the Arizona Cardinals while talking to a Cardinal skill player?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good.
Good.
Shoo, 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 shoo.
Shots. Explosives. Explosives. You can run.
Shots. Explosives. Yeah. I think he was talking to, who's that little small? I think Rondale Moore. I think that's who he was talking to there. Shoom, 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 shoom. Shots. Explosive. It's cool. They have a job to do. It doesn't bother me, except for you just made up a story that clearly you believe happened.
I will say, Philly fans did not like Jonathan Gannon, but he did, take the truth a little far.
Eagles defense was really good.
He made a scenario that didn't happen.
Yeah, but look, it's fine. It's fine. They had a lot of sacks because they were playing a bunch of like terrible teams early on in the year. Their defense was pretty good last season, but considering the talent they had, they should have won the Super Bowl. And a lot of people are pointing at Gannon as the reason as to why they lost. Maybe this is Matt Patricia 2.0, because Matt Patricia, as the defensive coordinator of the Patriots in Super Bowl 52. Not good. Not good at all. Anyway, Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call, to text. Last night, somebody that could potentially be a Houston Rocket next year shined, and you should be more excited about the setting in which he played well. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
I'm not sure how to answer that question. I definitely can't speak on the past. Today, we had a tremendous opportunity. We had control of the game for the most part. And then Trae Young just put on a hell of a performance in the fourth quarter. Made some big threes, the last one. Of course, was a stinger, but, you know, the only thing you can say is get ready for the next one.
That's Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics after his Celtics lost after blowing a lead late in Game 5 to the Atlanta Hawks. That series now returns to Atlanta for a Game 6 after Trae Young caught fire down the stretch and the Celtics melted down. Marcus Smart had a dumbass penalty around half court with Boston up 1 in Atlanta in the bonus. And Jason Tatum played very poorly. 8-21 on the game, 1-10 from outside, a probably unnecessary technical foul where he swatted a shot that was well short of the rim into the stands after a whistle had been blown. There was no reason for him to do it. The Celtics just melted down the stretch, and as a Celtics fan, I was mad about it. But let me look at this through the prism of Rockets fans here. last night is more confirmation that if the Rockets can get Jaylen Brown, they should go get him. Because there are a lot of people that believe Jason Tatum to be the most talented player on the Boston Celtics. But as somebody who watches that team on a regular basis, the amount of times that he no-shows and then Jaylen Brown steps up, it's a lot. And guess what happened as Jason Tatum no-showed last night? Jaylen Brown was 15 of 23 from the field, 4 of 7 from outside, 35 points. They should think very long and hard about every possible way to acquire him this offseason. And if they don't end up with the number one overall pick to get Victor Wembanyama, I even think that that lottery pick that they have at the top of the draft should be thought at least as some form of currency to potentially trade for Jaylen Brown. Because I think Brown is capable of carrying a team by himself. I strongly believe that. I watch this guy regularly. He always is ready for big moments. He is a two-way player. You can play him as a guard. You can play him as a forward. He's awesome. And I would be devastated if the Celtics didn't have Jaylen Brown anymore. At the very least, I'd be happy that Brown was on this Rockets team, and I would continue to give Rafael Stone credit because I love the Ime Udoka hire. And that might be something that makes Jaylen Brown think about perhaps asking for a trade to Houston. And Houston certainly has some assets. I know as a Celtics fan, I wouldn't really want any of them. But I loved what I saw from Jaylen Brown last night. He is clearly the best player on that team. The only people that think Tatum is definitively better than Brown in big-time moments, because I got a couple of people that tweeted at me when I tweeted that out a couple of nights ago. The only people that think that are the same, like, annoying Kobe Bryant stans that are all over the place. They like Jason Tatum because Jason Tatum and Kobe, I guess, were close, as evidenced by Jason Tatum sending a text to dead Kobe Bryant's cell phone and then posting it on social media. Sean's looking down and trying not to smirk here. What? He did that. That actually happened.
It's such a funny...
It's a peak Gen Z moment.
It is. Oh, my God.
I'm going to make somebody else's death about me, even though that death happened years ago.
Did you see the before the game of what he posted? He posted something else online.
I don't even want to know. Okay. Tatum posted something else?
It's Kobe related.
God.
And then he went out and shot 8 for 22.
That is a Kobe line. That is a Kobe line. Oh, but Kobe, clutch player. The people that try to put Kobe into the MJ versus LeBron stuff, I don't know what's wrong with you, but many things are. Many things are. Anyway, Jaylen Brown's awesome. The Rockets should do everything they can to get him. 713-780-3776 to call in and text in. Rafael Stone put out a statement along with the Houston Rockets to announce the hiring of Ime Udoka as the next head coach of this team. We are excited to welcome Ime to the Houston Rockets. His intelligence, drive, and toughness were the traits we were looking for in a coach to lead our team through this next stage of our development as we strive to become a champion. We were honored to have the opportunity to speak to multiple outstanding candidates throughout the interview process and felt that Ime's vision best aligned with the goals the Fertitta family and myself have for the future of the Rockets. I don't think it's debatable. He was by far the number one. He was the number one draft pick of coaches to be had this offseason, and I get it. I know Matt Barnes hinted that it might have been even worse than what we heard, whatever was going on between Ime Udoka and the Celtics staffer when he's in a relationship with Neil Long. Maybe there was something else going on, which was what Barnes seemed to intimate. There were rumors that it wasn't necessarily just one affair. I don't know how much stock to put into them. All I'm saying is they were out there. So allegations. But as far as what the Rockets need, which is tough love, and specifically tough love that translates into a young team overnight becoming successful and more mature, Udoka's the guy. And, you know, you got to wonder about where the Celtics are going to be going in this postseason without Udoka. Sean, you made me aware of somebody that was on the sideline for the Boston Celtics in last night's game, and that does not have me feeling good about the future direction of the Celtics. Are they going to bring this guy aboard?
He was hanging out, I think, at practice with or shoot around with Brad Stevens. He was over with Brad Stevens before the game. Steven Silas made the trip up to Boston to watch the Celtics. I think he whispered to Marcus Smart foul him right before Marcus Smart fouled.
That foul, man. That foul.
I love Marcus Smart. Trust me. I know.
That foul. Oh, my God. That was just such a terrible end of the game. I wasn't paying that much attention to it. I had it on my top TV because I was watching the Astros and Rays game on the big TV. And all of a sudden, I look up because I had the game on mute. And I was like, wait a second. The Celtics were up 14 points like 5 minutes ago. What the hell happened? So then I watched the end of it, and I mean, they just kept on doing dumb thing after dumb thing. Anyway, Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. By the way, Nick Wright suggested Dylan Brooks can go to Houston next year, and Nick can bleep right off for that. I love Nick, but bleep off. How dare you? How dare you suggest that? I feel like you're trying to troll your former city and putting that out there into the universe. Dylan Brooks to Houston as a culture setter? Go bleep yourself. I love you, but bleep off. Thank you. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, the Astros finally snapped the Tampa Bay Rays' vaunted home winning streak. And last night, we saw somebody who was a part, technically, of the Astros World Series run last year receive his ring. My question, if you weren't there for the actual winning of a championship, do you truly deserve a championship ring? Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Stick around.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.